Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 215. Tonight's show is brought to you by Braised Bambi.
Boy, that was smoked. It wasn't really braised.
I know, but Braised Bambi is a little bit more alliterative. So, we didn't record last week. I'll run through what I've done really quickly, which won't steal all of Andrea's thunder, because some of the things we did together, she then went and did more of separately. So, we recorded last 2 weeks ago. I went out and did a pretty easy motorcycle ride the following Friday, and then I started working more, because that's normally what I do, and I just went to work. I don't remember much of it, and then we didn't record last week as we were out elk hunting. Spoiler alert, no elks were harmed in the making of this film. And with that, we hiked around a bunch. We saw a bunch of cool stuff. And I did not lay eyes on a living elk over the course of those days, which is quite a bummer. But it was really cool to spend 3 days tromping around or driving around, whatever we ended up doing based on weather and whatnot. And, I mean, we made a hell of a go of it, but it just, the weather's been not doing what it normally does, so the elk weren't where they normally were, and it just didn't work out. So,
were you camping?
Then, no, yeah. We just, I mean, our unit, we live in our unit, so we just, I mean, at one point we were really close to the house, but you just can't get there from here. I mean, as the crow flies and as the truck drives are often quite different.
Sure, sure.
In this area based on stuff.
But you did like multiple day trips essentially?
Yeah, actually,
yeah.
We did multiple, I guess, multiple.
Like half day. Like we'd go hunt first thing in the morning. Like we'd get out before the sun was up and hunt for a few hours and then like kind of like getting between spots. It's like we'd stop by the house and have a really quick lunch and let the dogs out for a little while and get back out pretty quick. And
a little while isn't like
till dark almost.
Well, no, but I think our end time house was never more than 25 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
You know, it's a pretty quick turnaround. You walk in, you let the dogs out, they go potty, you start making lunch, you're putting your lunch in your face hole, you put the dogs up, you get back in the 4Runner, you keep going.
So hunt in the morning, club in the afternoon, every day.
Hunt in the morning, more hunting in the afternoon, ice cream in the evening, go to bed at like 8:15. It's pretty glorious, but it was still a lot of fun. And I came up with, I think everyone knows this, that maybe, I don't know, I'm a pretty goal oriented person, and I know that when you say things out loud, you make them real, or you make it where you have to hold yourself accountable. However, I haven't done all the planning yet, but I've come up with a really cool personal project for 2026 that I'm going to share more about probably in 2 weeks, which is something we'll get to and discuss live on air here. So,
all right. You want me to go since it's
adjacent
to what you've done?
And then I did a little bit of moto yesterday on the trials bike.
A little bit. He was gone for like most of the daylight hours.
Well, there wasn't a lot of... Okay, so I do have some not motorcycle-related plans for 2026, but one of my plans is to be a little bit more involved with the local Trials Club, and the Trials Club is hosting a national event in 2026, and part of what we were doing yesterday was scouting national lines, because without getting too boring, normally there's three easy sections, three hard sections, and they're not in the same place. It's like, oh, there's the support loop. Oh, there's the uppers loop. And for nationals, there's six classes in one loop. So every section has to be able to accommodate from a pretty good riding Colorado level person up through above Colorado level. Like nothing that...
Like the shit you see where they like...
Yeet themselves
from one rock to another, or from the ground to the top of a rock over their head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
So a lot of the time was, I mean, there was riding, goofing around. There's actually a really cool project going in at one of the guys' houses where he's putting up a bunch of printed photos of riders, and he got some photos of me for that. So, yeah, I'm going to be at Larry's.
Cool.
And then, I mean, so yes, I was gone from like 10:30 to 4:30, but I'd never needed to put gas in my bike. Like there was more BSing around than there was riding, but it was still a lot of fun. And if you're like, wow, Matt went for two motorcycle rides, but he hasn't done a bike ride yet. He must really hate bikes. If I don't try to go for a bike ride, then I won't know if things feel weird in my nether regions when I try to ride. So I've really been ostrich with my head in the sand about it, and the weather changed. So yeah, I'll ride. I promise. It'll happen.
Oh man. Yeah. So I have not ridden a motorcycle or a bike. Actually, I did ride the day before or 2 days before elk season started. I did take the e-bike out and rode it to a spot to like try and scout for some elk, but the wind was blowing like 30 miles an hour. And if you ever tried to look through any sort of magnifying device like binoculars or a spotting scope when the wind is blowing those things around, making them vibrate, it's really freaking hard. Not only is it difficult to see, but when you do focus and then it shakes some and does that over and over, it starts to make you a little bit seasick. So that was not very productive for that, but that was my ride that I did. But yeah, Matt and I hunted 3 days together, and then he went back to work, and I hunted 2 days by myself. The last day, I actually saw a herd of cow elk, which is what we were after. The only problem was, so I was about half a mile away from them, just approximately, just kind of looking at the map and estimating. I was about half a mile away, and the elk were in a plot of state trust land. So the Colorado has state trust land, and those are plots of land. They're usually like a square, and those can be leased. A majority of them are leased by Colorado Parks and Wildlife so that they can be used by the public during hunting season. And this is a rule that gets broken a lot. I won't rant about it too much, but they're supposed to be only publicly accessible during hunting season, or it's a very broad thing. It's like whenever, I think September 1st through like May 31st the next year or something. Like, it basically covers all big game and turkey hunting seasons. And you can access those with a hunting license or with, it's like a pass of some sort that you can purchase if you don't want to buy a hunting license. It's not very expensive. It's like $30 or something. No one pays attention to that rule. I've literally never seen it enforced, and there are people on public state trust lands year round, and I doubt that a lot of them have, most of them don't have a license or a pass. But also, those plots of land, if they're not leased by Colorado Parks and Wildlife, can be leased by a private individual or a company. There are different types of leases. There's recreational, there's mining leases, there's, you know, if a power company's electric lines, transmission lines go through that land, they will lease part of that for the lines to go through and to access that. So there's lots of different ways that they can be leased. And the elk were in one that has a private lease. And so technically it's off limits. Like, I couldn't go in and actually hunt the elk. Would it have mattered considering how little those leases or those lands are really governed by any sort of state official? I don't know. But I didn't do it because if you get in trouble, like if you trespass, which I guess technically that would be trespassing, if you trespass and you hunt and you kill something, you can get a pretty hefty ticket and they take your animal if you get caught. So yeah, I didn't do it because I didn't want to risk getting in trouble. Might have some regrets about that, but I did the safe and legal thing and did not go. And I wanted to just sit around and wait because a friend of mine had seen, he had been deer hunting like a week before we were out there, and said, yeah, there's this herd of elk that's moving on and off of public land. And so when I found them and they were in the private land, I was like, well, I'm just going to sit around and just watch them and see what they do and see if I can see them moving into public land. Well, then it started to snow. And I have all of the gear to sit around in the snow. I've got warm stuff. I've got waterproof stuff. That's not a big deal. I don't mind the snow. The problem was it snowed so hard, I couldn't see the elk.
Oh, yeah. That's something we ran into a lot.
Yeah.
Like, we were just like in the clouds.
Yeah. That happened several times where just for hours, like you just couldn't see further than, I don't know, 200 or 300 yards away because you were just in a cloud. Or whatever you wanted to look at was in a cloud. And that was the case with this. It was snowing so hard I couldn't see them. And it was kind of mid to late morning. And I'm like, well, they bedded down. I watched them all just lay down on this hillside. And they'll do that for hours. And so since I couldn't see them and I knew they were going to be there for a while, I was like, you know, I'm going to run home and let the dogs out, eat a little bit, make some hot cocoa and take back out with me and go back out. I did that. And it was kind of threatening to rain. And when I got to the spot where I knew it was like the first spot where I could see the spot where the elk had laid down, as soon as I basically got my binoculars out, a cloud came in and I could no longer see that spot. So I went to another place and just kind of sat around and just waited to see if they'd show up just in the area where, you know, my buddy had seen them before and they just didn't show up. So that was it. That was like the last day. I, you know, stayed out there until it was almost dark and came in by headlamp and did not see them.
We ain't seen shit.
But that was pretty much it. Since then, done a tiny bit of unsuccessful beaver trapping because I was trying to trap river beavers and I think they're just smarter than pond beavers. And really, that's all I've been working. I've just been working on stuff around the house. Cooked Thanksgiving food today. I don't know. How long ago did you find that deer? It was back at like early summer, late spring, right? Something like that. I mean, given the size of it. So basically, Matt, on his way home from work one day, found a very fresh roadkill fawn, a deer fawn. I mean, this thing it was small. And he picked it up and
August 4th.
There we go. So right around beginning of summer. And yeah, he picked it up and brought it home and we put it in the freezer and I brined it for a couple of days and then put it on the smoker and smoked it last night, wrapped it up, and then warmed it back up today. Just because whenever you smoke stuff, sometimes, like, it's not good to have to smoke on a time budget because sometimes it just takes longer than you expect. Yeah. And it was pretty good. I wouldn't encourage anyone to just, you know, try to find suckling fawn for their Thanksgiving dinner because it didn't really have that much deer flavor to it. It just kind of tasted like the seasoning and stuff that I'd cooked it in with, you know, some good smoke flavor, but it didn't taste bad. It just didn't really have a lot of like interesting flavor to it. So
flavor was not very complex.
Yeah, it was a very simple flavor profile, but that's pretty much it for me. Kenny, what about you?
Let's see. I got no cool bike stories. I will probably get out a good deal down to St. George this winter and spring. So we'll have some cool riding stuff to talk about. What did I do? I rode moto one day, just went to the local little trash area and it's still really fun over there. Lots of cool stuff. And yeah, enjoyed a little 3 or 4 hour ride. What else did I do? There was something else. We all, group people went and shot some guns like you do in Utah. You know, we realized it had been a while since we had done that and, the state of Utah will take your driver's license away if you don't shoot enough. So yeah, went and did that.
I feel like that's not true, Kenny.
I'm told that it's true. So we were just doing our, Utah duty, but it was cool.
I'll be right back. I'm going to put the dog up.
You know, guns are neat.
Turns out guns are cool. I like guns. They're
there's
fun.
Just so much stuff. Like, there's just such a rabbit hole you can go down. Yeah, what a crazy market. Like, it's just wild. I really hadn't paid attention to it for many, many, many years. I have what I have, and it's all fine. But yeah, it's just crazy. There's all kinds of new stuff all the time, and just the whole industry is pretty gigantic.
It's gigantic.
It's pretty entrenched.
And I think that the firearms industry has more options for marketing new than the cycling world does because, yeah, I mean, I don't know. development of new cartridges leading to the purchase of new guns with some edge case benefits that most of the, wait a minute, I'm making this sound more like the bike industry minute by minute now, with some edge case benefits for a small number of users. Yeah, that's the bike industry. Never mind. Yeah. But I would say that the bike industry got past its rim brake clincher zone long before, or the gun industry did that way before the bike industry did. But let's talk about new shit.
Sure.
Bike stuff. I think we attack the fiery inferno in many people's garage first. CPSC issues battery safety warning after Rad Power said it can't afford a recall. So
this is really interesting to me. So
caused at least 31 fires.
The CPSC, who I assume at some point has a legal right to like intervene at some point, which sounds like this is the point. I think maybe in the beginning they can like maybe be semi-friendly and offer direction and all that. That might not really be true, but I'm sure that it's in both parties' interest for, you know, the CPSC and said company making a sketchy product or not realizing they made a sketchy product to like work to a resolution. But it's weird to me the way this is worded. I don't really understand it. The CPSC basically said, your resolution is not nearly satisfactory. Like, that's not going to work. But Rad Power is like, but it's going to be really hard to make it work and do it right. And now that's where we're at. Like, I don't understand. So the CPSC just lays over and there's nothing they can do about it. I don't understand. Do you understand like what the actual repercussions are?
I'm not sure exactly how you can.
Did a quick Google. The commission has a program called the Fast Track Product Recall Program, in which a firm reports a product defect as required under Section 15 of the Consumer Product Safety Act, and the option of immediately, within 20 working days, implementing a recall working with the compliance staff. So it sounds like, and here we go, from an attorney's office, I'm avoiding AI because it's usually wrong. The government can force a recall only when the product violates laws or mandatory safety standards. Both the CPSC and the FDA may issue a mandatory recall. And it sounds like in this instance, the stop use isn't a recall because Rad Power cannot replace the product.
And I guess they're just saying, Rad Power is saying, we're doing the right thing because we're telling people to discontinue using the product and throw away the battery. They're just not offering the consumer a replacement.
No.
Is that like legal, do you think?
Dispose of it property. Dispose of it properly in accordance with local hazardous waste regulations and guidelines.
Because it makes me wonder. Like,
so you're going to pay far out the ass for that.
It makes me wonder if, you know, I don't know, Ford has some super dangerous thing out there in a car. Like, I don't know, an airbag that kills you or something.
Honda Claymore.
And yeah, I guess Honda did that for a minute, right? Anyway, can they just say, oh, well, that's really expensive recall. What if we just tell people not to drive that car anymore? And then they're like, okay, and they just walk away?
I think in these instances, your options are you would replace it or you don't exist. I think that's the two options.
It sounds like they're going to not exist. Even outside of this CPSC thing, it sounds like Rad Power is on the ropes, unfortunately. I don't like seeing cycling industry companies go out of business. So it's not, I'm not like going after that. I mean, this brings up a whole mess of stuff. This could be a 3-hour show based on Chinese cheap e-bikes that are dangerous and shittily built and will end up in a landfill in a couple of years and have zero support. It's a problem that we see time and time and time again. So I guess moving on from the Rad Power thing, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I got two things. One is, as a shop, we are going to have a meeting about it on Monday and kind of figure out what we want to do in general moving forward. One is, we're just not going to work on Rad Power bikes. Number two is, what direction do we go in general working on these Chinese e-bikes? Because it's half of them are hub drive and it's expensive to work on those things. They suck. And they're shittily built, and we touch them, and then they have some electrical problem, and they're just not safe to ride, all kinds of other stuff. And people buy these contraptions on Amazon and God knows where, and they bring them in all the time. They are everywhere. I would say 1 in 4 bikes that rolls in our front door is a shit China e-bike that needs something. And we hate turning people away. We want to be everything to everybody as much as we can. We want to sell kids bikes. We want to sell S-Works road bikes. We want to sell e-bikes. You know, if we can help some kid with a scooter, whatever it is, like, we'll do all that stuff. But I think we're going to have to draw a line in the sand. And especially these contraptions that really aren't bicycles, but have bicycle sized tires. That's a tough thing. And I think we're probably going to have to make a decision. And I think we're just not going to work on them anymore. Do you guys see that kind of stuff in your neck of the woods?
We do. And I have like a really strong argument for that now.
For not like, working on them?
It hit me this week. Yeah. So one of the, and I'll probably do this at some point just because one, I think it'd be a fun project, and two, I think it'd be useful. But the there's companies online that sell off-road hand throttle kits for Jeeps. And you know what it is? It's a friction shifter. That's all it is. It's a friction shifter with a clamp to mount it to your shifter.
What's the point of it?
So you have a three-pedal truck. You know, you got a manual transmission. Sure. You can clutch with one foot, brake with one foot, and use that to, you know, bring yourself above idle.
I got so it. So a lot of times doing more crawly stuff, you're probably not really, really working the gas. You kind of leave gas at a constant, and you can just play around with clutching and brake.
Or if you need to get moving again,
I got you.
You might need 3 feet for a minute, and you just give one of those functions to your hand. And if I put one of those kits in my truck, and I rolled up to a bike shop and was like, hey, change my cable. There's no reason for them to do that. It's bike parts, but there's no reason that a bike shop should replace the shift cable assembly on my hand throttle on my 97 Jeep TJ. There's no reason for a bike shop to work on your brakes on your electric motorcycle just because they happen to be bicycle brakes. Like, it's the same thing. It really is.
Can I go back real quick to the Rad Power thing?
Yeah.
I looked a little bit more in this article while you guys were talking. They basically said Rad Power's statement is that they had third-party testing done, and they think that their batteries are actually okay, even though 31 of them caught on fire.
It's not very typical.
They say that the CPSC did not independently examine the batteries per industry accepted test standards. So they say that the headline that they didn't agree to the recall is misleading and fails to include that fact.
Well, I think what they're saying, and maybe they're not wrong, and there's probably more to this story like there always is. Maybe Rad Power really does. Maybe all their batteries meet whatever these, you know, CE or whatever standards are out there. They might meet all those standards. I guess that's a possibility, right? But there could be something outside of that where they're technically checking all the boxes, but you still have an unsafe product. And they're just saying, well, we checked all the boxes, so we're out. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, and they're also saying that they've offered good faith solutions to address the agencies concerned, including offering consumers an opportunity to upgrade to the Safe Shield batteries, which are like the, I guess, safer version.
Yeah, well, I mean, why'd you make unsafe shield batteries?
At a substantial discount, and CPSC rejected that opportunity. So they say that the significant cost of the all-or-nothing demand from CPSC would force RAD to shut its doors immediately, leaving no way to support our riders or our employees.
So you can buy a less flamey battery for $500 instead of $1,000.
That's probably what it is, yeah.
Well, I mean, how many Specialized and Treks and Santa Cruz's and Giants have caught on fire?
Very few. There have been a few. First Gen Levo, the one with the...
One caught on fire.
Yeah.
In the woods.
And I think there was one in... I saw a picture of one in a garage. And one or two others, maybe, that might be pushing it. I'm not positive. But it all...
So do you think it would be safe to say that out of all of the typical bike industry brands that there have probably been fewer than 31 incidents?
I can pretty much guarantee that.
Across all of them?
Yeah, yeah. I would pretty much guarantee that.
That's what I'm getting to right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and Specialized did at least somewhat try to fix that. They got new little covers that went on those batteries, and they've since designed batteries that don't have, you know, they don't have water ingress problems like the first gen ones did. And yeah, I think it's extremely rare to see that now. Could there be some problem in the future where someone gets a bad batch of cells from a vendor or something crazy? Like, yeah, totally that stuff could happen. But if you generally look, I've taken a lot of specialized batteries apart because I'm a battery dork, and you can just see the progression from Gen 1 to Gen 2. Haven't taken a Gen 3 yet, a third gen battery, which is a Gen 4 Levo. I have not taken one of those apart yet, but they're extremely well built and, you know, lots of sealing from the elements. And yeah, it's very, I think it's very rare that you're going to see one of those batteries have an issue. And there's a reason that they're expensive.
Yeah. And I guess I'm not trying to just be shill for, I mean, I just named off like four brands, so it's not even a single brand, but you know, I would love to see the, like, sure, maybe there was some water ingress. There could have been other batteries, you know, like let's say that a Gen 3 battery from a Gen 4 Levo catches on fire tomorrow. Will we find that the, you know, the battery 50-50 to stump and was internally damaged this week and then it caught on fire the next time it went on the charger? I mean, I think that we're not hearing that about Rad. We're hearing that, like, Lord Jesus, there's a fire.
Yeah, that's what it said, that several incidents occurred when the battery was not being charged or the bike was in storage. So, yeah.
Yeah, so
spontaneous combustion.
I mean, sucks to suck, but like,
there is
$734,000 worth of property damage from 12 fires.
That's actually really cheap. Like, I think they got off really, really, they've gotten off really well so far, honestly, in my opinion, because taking down a single median price house is $750,000. Yeah. So anyway, I think it could be a hell of a lot worse. And, you know, hasn't taken out a bike shop yet, to my knowledge. And that's probably going to be expensive. So yeah. Anyway, it's just stuff we got to discuss. I think there's a huge race to the bottom on these Chinese e-bikes. We've known this is happening ever since the opening of the pandemic, basically. There's just been a giant race to the bottom. And I think another huge issue is Amazon. And Amazon, similar to Amazon marketplaces, you know, whether it's Walmart or wherever, and I'm not singling out Walmart necessarily, but these people that have these marketplaces where they don't really vet these products out and they just allow them to be sold on their marketplace. And people have some vibe buying something on Amazon that hopefully it's semi-safe. But so many of the battery-powered things on Amazon are absolutely not safe. And ultimately, it really does need to be the responsibility of Amazon, because Amazon is making money on the backs of these products. And they need to vet these things out to some degree. You know, they need to require, and maybe they do now going forward, I don't know. There's all kinds of battery standards that have changed semi-recently. I don't remember all the, you know, numbers for all those. But regardless, Amazon needs to be somewhat responsible for this stuff. And we've just got to weed out all these ultra cheap, not safe batteries, whether it's in a freaking hoverboard or a bicycle or whatever it's in, because it's a big problem.
Yeah. It's kind of a race to the bottom with like the cheap e-bikes right now.
It's horrible. And it's such a shame too, because people still spend not an insignificant amount of money. Somewhere around $1,500 is probably kind of as cheap as you're going to get an e-bike for. Are there cheaper ones? Yeah, probably. But $1,500. So this is still...
There's $235, yeah, that's bad, on Walmart.com.
But, you know, these $1,000 e-bikes...
$235, free shipping.
That's
$580.
That's insane.
Free shipping. $284 with $20 shipping.
Yeah, so... Oh, yeah, and we had a listener that had asked us... last time when we recorded, we talked a good bit about e-bikes, and the listener asked, why didn't you mention the Rivian e-bike? And I looked at it really quick, and it's the brand that they sell it under is Also.
As in like the car company?
It's, yeah, and it's $4,500, and it's just like a, I don't know, a tech bro looking e-bike that's probably no better or not much better than, you know, the $800 one from Walmart.
Those are all so bad. And I mean, that's with every bike. When Jeep or whoever wants to make a bicycle, yeah, for like an ad and like, look at this Jeep bike on our roof and you can buy it as an accessory, and people have zero idea. I'm sorry, but if you're not in the cycling industry, you are not going to make a successful bicycle. It's not possible.
And it's got like, I mean, like it has suspension parts on it. I don't know what the fuck they are. But someone's going to wheel one in your shop and be like, I don't know, my fork, like it was squishy. And now like the gold part at the bottom doesn't show anymore. And can you fix it? You're going to be like, no, that's like a That's like an off-brand, like the tires that are on the, I looked up, like, I was just trying to figure out where the components came from, and I noticed one picture had a Kenda logo on the tires, like the all-terrain tires. I tried to look those up on Kenda's website, and they're like discontinued. Like, you can buy them in lots on eBay for $1,000, like a lot of 70 of them or something. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't think that the Rivian thing, I think it's just fancier looking and probably has some more nice looking electronics and integrated stuff to appeal to people who would want a Rivian e-bike, but I don't really think, it doesn't really look good. And it's, I mean, it's a commuter bike for sure. It's not really like...
Yeah, I'm getting really big. Reese and Mueller and Specialized Globe Haul had a baby vibes right now.
Yeah, like they don't give you... If you go through all their stuff on their website, there's absolutely no mention of any component brand. It doesn't say like who makes the motor.
There's not even real pictures. They're all rendered. Like,
yeah.
I don't like it. Yeah, don't buy it.
I don't like it at all. I don't think any of our listeners need to be told not to buy this.
God, I need to...
All right, can we move on to something besides e-bikes?
We can. I've got I've got what is possibly the coolest product of 2025.
All right.
It is, and you'll need to look this up so you can follow along. The Stayer, S-T-A-Y-E-R. It's called the Stayer Banana Riser.
Oh, I've seen it.
I don't know why I love that so much. It's probably because it's penis-shaped. But it is just, it's awesome. Like, it's just so awesome.
The banana riser stick.
I just freaking love it. I love how
220 pounds.
It's expensive. I love how it's even got the little, like, Chiquita banana logo looking sticker on it. It's just hilarious. God.
That's pretty silly.
It does have, like, a use case. It's not a use case that I would use it for.
Yeah, I know. It's.
But I guess if you want to fit a basket thing on a drop bar bike type thing.
Yeah. It's very silly.
I'm going to buy one just so I can put it on upside down.
That's
I need the Jerry.
Sad banana.
I need the JRA credit card. And I'm going to glue a single acorn to the side of it.
I like the description. The product description on their website is you have to pre-order it. And it says, we made 3 stems. We sold 3 stems. So we will make more stems.
Well, they're about to sell 4 stems now because of this show. It's freaking awesome, though. I don't know. I really like it. And it actually seems to be reasonably well made.
I feel like if it wasn't so expensive, someone would buy one of these and ship it to us, like just as a joke.
But anyway, it's just awesome. I really like that.
All right. I'm going to go next. I saw when I was looking through new shit, the Zlean Race Runner Radical Truly Radial Cross Country Tire. I mean, I think radial tires are cool. And I've got a little bit of backstory here because sometime back around, I don't know, 2011, 2012... I had the privilege of testing some pre-production prototype tires for Maxxis. They had a team, you know, like a bunch of riders kind of all over that could ride prototype tires and give them feedback. Their radial tire, which is a radial road tire, was one of the tires that I tested back somewhere, I don't know the exact date, but I would guess somewhere probably around 2012. And that tire exists still on the Maxxis website. It's still for sale. You can still buy it. It is a wonderful road tire. It rides a lot like, you know, and back then there weren't tubeless road tires, but it rode like what tubeless road tires do now, but it was a lot lighter. It rode great. It felt like riding a tubular, but just on your normal clincher. I mean, it's a really, really nice road tire. Is there stuff out there now that rides just as well that's not necessarily that tire? Yeah, sure. But then it was kind of a revolutionary thing. And it says on Maxxis's website, the world's only radial tire, bicycle tire. And now this company.
Well, that's not true at all.
Yeah. So this company is now claiming that they are the only true radial tire in the world.
What about all the Schwalbe tires?
Here's the thing. The Schwalbe tires, it comes, when we talk about radial, we need to know about the...
What radial means?
What radial means and what the direction is. So a true radial...
Gather around, kids, while Uncle Matt explains radial tires.
I learned all this very recently, like 20 minutes ago. But essentially, a radial is the cords run And you know what? I'm going to get some of this wrong. And Tim Krueger, don't throw your phone across the room. But long story short, the closer you get to radial, the not good it gets. So they're at 88%. So they're not actually radial.
So
they're
like
not at
radial
90,
means
they're
that
at 88 degrees, not 90 degrees, perpendicular to the casing.
Or it's like a radial tire. It runs perpendicular to the direction of travel, like at 90 degrees to the direction of travel.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And these are at 88.
Or the Schwalbes are at 88.
Schwalbe tires are at 75. These are at 88.
Oh, okay.
They're not a true radial.
All right. Sorry, I...
They're only radial if you're, like, getting blown around in the wind a little bit. Also, big problem they have is your crank is just going to bury itself into the ground.
Yeah, that is a short sidewall.
15 millimeters shorter than a standard 2.25. So, and when we talk about a sidewall getting shorter, that is your crank 15 millimeters closer to the ground. So you went from 165 cranks to 180 cranks from a pedal strike scenario.
And is it because that's what they needed to do to make it handle right? Why didn't they just make it taller?
They had to do that to make it handle right, but guess what tire pressure I would have to run based on their recommendations? 50.
Hmm.
I need to run 70% more than standard.
That's
Jeez.
A lot. I mean, I know that you do have to, they do, so, like, they're, at least based on my experience a long time ago, they do ride a lot smoother. It's like when you hit a little bump or, you know, brake bump or a pebble or, I don't know, a pothole or something, like, the tire actually deforms a little bit more, even at higher pressure, which makes it a really comfortable and smooth tire. But I think 50 in a mountain bike tire is kind of silly. And, like, that's more than what some rim manufacturers say that you can run on their rims, too.
Are you allowed to call it a radial tire if it's just a single belt that's radial and everything else is, like, old school?
I think so, because car tires are still going to have... I think you still have in a car tire, radial...
They got, like, they got all kinds of crisscrossy sections, right? Like 45 degree, well, 90 degree, and all kinds of shit.
Well, car tires are bi-supply.
No, they're not. They're 100% radial. Yeah, bi-supply is like tube type.
Yeah, but okay, so then, sorry, no, I'm confusing myself. But in radial, like, there's still stuff that connects the radials to the sidewalls. Like, it's not like it just keeps going around and around and around.
I should probably read about it more to, like, understand why. I mean, to me, it sounds like it's just a marketing thing. Like somebody saying that there's graphene in a tire. They just want to be able to say that.
All right. Well, you should keep going. I don't want to get bogged down in radial tire. I just wanted to bring that up because they said they were the world's first or the world's only true radial tire, and Maxxis claimed that more than a decade ago. So,
the box says born 100% radial. What? It should say born 88% radial. But I guess it's not really 88%. Right. It'd be some kind of other fraction. Because it's out of 90 instead of out of 100, right?
They're like 97%, close enough.
Born almost fully radial.
You know what's not radial? These NV3D printed grips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got some on order, Kenny? I know you're itching to try them.
We do.
Okay, cool. I'm not excited.
Is it just me or is like... Are all the logos scratched off of that Shimano brake on the first picture of the Envy grips?
I didn't notice that. I just noticed that the shifter paddle is really dirty, like the brake lever's been leaking. That's what I saw.
It's possible.
But, yeah, if you look at the Bike Rumor photo, there's definitely a lot of gook on that shift paddle.
You know, it looks like pretty clean dirt. It might just
no,
be dirt.
No, look
dirt.
Right here.
I know, I see it.
And
I
here. Just... And down in here. I would 100% look inside that XTR lever.
Oh yeah, I mean,
flashlight.
I'd look in there. I but
I mean, it's
say
it's broken
100%.
For sure. I can tell from here.
Well, because
tell
it's a
the
Shimano
way that
brake?
It is. Like that shifter is too dirty for that brake not to be leaking.
Oh boy,
that needs to be a sticker. That won't happen, but it needs to be a sticker.
They're 3D printed. Well, the cross country ones are 3D printed and $35, and the trail ones look a lot more like I don't know. Every other trail.
B&W grip.
Yeah, like every other grip out there. And I don't know. I don't like round grips.
They don't like you.
Yeah, I know.
If you print out two pages, like on your laser printer, and you put them on top of each other? Is that 3D printing?
I don't think so, because 3D printing is just like the colloquial, I can't pronounce that word, but like the name for additive printing, right?
I think that's what they're getting at. All books are 3D printed, right?
Yeah, like on a molecular level, like putting ink on top of a surface like paper, like it is 3D. It's just not visible with the naked eye. If we want to be literal about it.
I'm just sick of 3D printed shit.
I mean, some of it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, most of they have found like 3 actual useful cases for it. Other than making little plastic trinkets. I mean, 3D printers are neat and all for home gamer use. But other than making, like, I don't know, a shower hook or something that's going to break off, I just don't. Yeah, it's just not my jam.
Yeah, I think the places that it does the best is I have seen some people essentially 3D print something and say, hey, this does everything we need to do, and then send that file off and get it made in aluminum or something.
For prototyping, it's cool, but I don't want prototype grips on my bike.
Man, what about prototype wheels? Remember those spoked wheels in the World Cup stuff?
Were those 3D printed?
No, the brand was Prototype.
Gotcha.
Which makes them one of the hardest to Google. Prototype brand wheels is might pull it up. It did, but yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they're good grips. I just hate marketing stuff.
Well, what about...
What about the ratio derailleur?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
We chatted about a derailleur a few months ago, right? Was it this one or was it a different one?
It's this one. Now there's like just more details and pictures. And one thing that just really bugs me about this is how similar they made the logo that says ratio. It looks like the SRAM Rival logo.
I mean, they borrowed some fonts for sure.
Yeah. Like it's...
I like it more than when they initially gave the info. Is it expensive? Yeah. I would like to try it. I think it's a reasonable product to have, and I think it's commendable to have some level of right to repair. I think that's pretty cool. But again, expecting bike shops to stock all this stuff and like, you know, I don't know about that. But I don't know. Commendable. If someone can actually make a derailleur that works as good as a SRAM derailleur, I would be impressed. Even if you can make it work 90% as good as a SRAM derailleur, that's impressive. But then the problem is a SRAM GX Eagle mechanical derailleur is really cheap. And it's going to work for a really long time. And they make little pulley wheels for it and this and that. And if you smash this derailleur hard enough, you're going to break stuff that's going to be extremely expensive to fix, even if they do make parts for it. That so much so you could probably just buy a new GX derailleur. To me, it's the same as having some incredibly bougie bottom bracket bearings that are $300 or $400, but then you have to go through the effort of rebuilding them, and eventually they're probably going to die anyway, and they're probably going to creak and have all kinds of other problems. Or you could just buy a $50 to $60 bottom bracket every 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be like, so this is to everyone who's in a bike shop that's on the Tour Divide route. You're going to see these. You're going to see these that are fucked up. And you're just going to have to sell the person a derailleur that matches their shifter, because that's what you got in stock and they're in a hurry.
Yep.
And they're just going to have to carry that broke ass derailleur home with them, because, you know, then they can get home and repair it after they carry it home with them in their bike bag.
Same thing. Don't run wheels that have weird ass spokes. It's just not a good idea.
Yeah, unless you're going to pack spokes with you for those wheels.
BYOS, bring your own spokes.
Yeah. So that's my advice to anyone who's thinking like, I'm going to build a kook ass bike packing bike and use this derailleur. You should get repair parts yourself and carry them with you.
But I guess it's not a huge deal if you're just okay with replacing it with a SRAM GX when you break it. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. Or you could save yourself $90 and just start with a SRAM GX.
Yeah, you could. But I would like to see this thing in real life, and hopefully it's awesome. One little article that I read, they said they really liked it. As far as just,
I mean, that
the
barrel adjuster wants to break off so bad. It's just out there, just blowing in the breeze, waiting for something. And you know, like, I don't know, I see this all the time, even on bikes that like mechanics at bike shops have built, where when they put the bike together, they adjust the shifting. They just keep turning that barrel adjuster. Like, they hook up the cable and they shift a few times. And
where's this barrel adjuster? I'm not seeing it.
It sticks out of the back. It sticks vertically up out of the back of the derailleur.
Oh, weird. The one I'm seeing, it's the cable going straight into the roll-a-ma-jig.
Well, the one Andrea is looking at is on a road bike.
Oh.
Oh, all the pictures I'm looking at have a barrel adjuster on them.
I'm definitely looking at a mountain one that does not have a barrel adjuster.
Every picture in the Bike Rumor article has a barrel adjuster.
It's fine. We can move on.
Yeah, we can keep going.
Wheels Manufacturing is making direct mount chain rings. And I'm going to buy one as soon as they come out with 8-volt.
If they ever do.
They're going to. No, I mean, it says in the article, and yeah. Like, it's the... What they're doing is what... And I know that we've been beating them up, but what they're doing is what Wolftooth should be doing, is just building cool chain rings. Like, $80 retail. It comes in purple. I'm going to fucking buy one. It comes in black, red, orange, green, teal, blue, and purple. 30, 32, 34. And they're made in 3-bolt only right now. And they offer 2 different tooth profiles for SRAM Shimano.
All right. Did you guys see there's a voluntary recall for the P&W Loam Pedal Gen 2?
I saw that at one point and I didn't care because they're flat pedals. And
yeah, so they've had 4 axle failures. And they said that the affected axles are from a small batch that had a defect in the heat treatment process. And due to the potential of spindle batches being mixed, we're not comfortable having any of them ridden right now and have decided to recall all of them in the field.
Jeez.
Does not affect the Gen 1 loam pedal or the range composite pedal.
And everybody's going to get some free composite pedals while they figure out what the fuck to do with your metal pedals.
There you go.
So, yeah, there you have it.
Do we want to keep going on new shit, or, I mean...
Have you ever seen a bike shop that carries P&W parts?
Yes.
Okay. Just curious.
Do we want to keep going with new shit? I mean, there's a lot of it, but I feel like we should spread it out over the next...
A little bit.
Yeah, like maybe over the next episode, because it might dry up again.
Okay. You got some listener questions?
Yeah, we got a little listener content also, if I can find it. Man, did I close that window really?
My beard hair is the perfect length to hold dog hair right now. Like, it's just the stubble, Velcro stubble.
And it just Velcros dog hair to your face?
Yep. I'm going to shave the dog when we're done recording.
Okay. Both of them, or?
Yeah. The small one's going to put up a real fight.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I'm going to give her some horse tranquilizer.
We got an email from Shiggy Person, sent me a book that is apparently a real book. And... it's called Stuff My Beaver, a book about taxidermy. That's a thing, apparently.
There we go.
And, yeah, let's go to the next one. Someone giving Matt some jacket advice. Michael says the Outdoor Research Helium jacket can be found on sale for a hundy, fits in a jersey pocket, and isn't too flappy.
I found the jacket that I need. So that's the other update. Good old Dickie getting a shout out here in the show. 32-inch wheel Pioneer, single speed, because he's not smart enough to anyways.
Is Dickie still doing bicycle-related things?
Oh, yeah. Well,
we do have a listener question about 32-inch.
We talked a little bit, and I ordered a jacket at his recommendations, and I forgot to send him a thank you message because it's everything I've ever hoped for. It was the Castelli... Let me see if I can find it real quick. I'm pretty sure it's the Castelli Squall jacket. I might be mixing up two brands right now. Castelli Squall Shell retails for $155, on sale right now under $120. If you're on the fence on sizing, size up, because
it's tight.
I got a pretty big size, and boy howdy, I could have gone one bigger if I really wanted. I'm to 190 pounds, and the XL would not be too big. I kind of forgot how small Castelli was. And I still might actually get a bigger one. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as rainproof as the Gore jacket was, but golly, it's stretchy, it's thin, it's ultra packable. I mean, you could boof this thing if you really needed to. So.
All right, next listener question from David. David says, this is a long question. I might get Matt to read
Let me just get going.
Okay.
Couldn't find a current email address. I'm using this form. You've done it correctly, David. I know you've discussed the forthcoming 32-inch Overlords, so thought I'd reach out. As a lanky mofo between large and XL, who also greatly enjoyed my 18 Top Fuel RSL in extra large, who likes weird shit, I'm going down the 32er road at a fairly rapid clip, trying to finalize GO before I pull the trigger with a builder in Taiwan and wondering if you had any thoughts or things you'd considered. I got a pretty high saddle, which is 775 bottom bracket to rails, which means absolutely dick all nothing, because we don't know what saddle you're riding. His saddle's pretty high, maybe as high as mine, maybe a lot higher, who knows?
I mean, just add 40 mil. That's gonna...
It's not always.
Yeah, sometimes 40. It's 41. Yeah, it'll get you close.
It won't. The Specialized saddle and the Ergon saddle that I rode most recently had a 22 or 23 millimeter.
But he has an 800 millimeter saddle height, and we can go
give
from
or
there.
Take. Yeah. Always a challenge. Or let's see, the drop to the handlebars is always a challenge for me on 29ers, despite 6'1" after a hot shower and a good stretch. Not overly concerned with standover, hence the relatively high top tube, maybe two bottles and frame bag. Also, reject the uber short chainstays trend, so this at 444 to 464 virtual chainstay length with sliders should be in range. It's still not that long. I mean, my stump jumper's like 450 or something, and it rides fucking awesome. Building around a 530 fork length, starting with Ren fork limited to 5 millimeters, 80 millimeter head tube, and 65-degree head tube angle keeps trail figure in the 30 millimeter range. With stack 640-ish BB roughly height, same as my Epic hardtail, means 30 millimeters more bottom bracket drop, so I'll be more in the bike. Like
he says, more in this bitch.
So more in this bitch, like Kenny in a tub of meat rice. Wheelbase works out to 1230 or so. Probably going I9 on spokes, boost Hydra 2 hubs for stiffness on some 32 wheel carbon hoops, because I don't believe in pivot super boost propaganda. UDH sliders, so geared to start, but I suspect this will live a single speed. Some new tires, wheels, forks on the horizon will be a fun test on the next year. Designing for 32 by 2.6 clearance. Would love to hear any thought process you've had on this. I really think you've knocked out the things that people should consider. I wouldn't be afraid, as a taller person, I wouldn't be afraid of a little bit longer chainstay. I'm trying to come up with this thing, and I don't know what to describe it yet. But I think the reason that I like a long chainstay, and I think the reason that chainstays on some bicycles grow as the bike grows, is this thing I want to name something like rear center angle or something like that. But essentially, if you draw a line from the bottom bracket, or sorry, from the rear axle to the like ass of the saddle, essentially, like where you sit on the saddle, what is that angle relative to the axles or the ground? You know, when someone's seat is 4 inches shorter than mine, that angle is much lower. And as my seat gets higher and my body gets larger proportionally, generally speaking, that angle is going to grow and grow and grow and grow, making the rear end feel less and less supportive, because, you know, unicycle in this world would have a 90 degree rear angle, and a, you know, cargo bike is going to have, and I'm just pulling, I mean, the unicycle is going to be 90, but a cargo bike is going to be a 12. And I don't know that there is something as, let's say, ultimate as chainstay length, as I think that rider angle is going to feel, or that rear angle is going to make the bike feel a certain way. I mean, I'm totally crazy, I know it, but like the more that I think about bikes, the more that I think that, and I've said this before, but like either my bike or Andrea's bike doesn't fit. One of them doesn't work. We both feel comfortable on our bikes, but the same bike does not ride the same for two people that are vastly different in sizes. And I understand things are done with layup and whatnot, but if we're not talking about layup, we're talking about geometry. And my seat grows higher disproportionately to the head tube, So the stack is always going to be too high for one person or too low for the next, depending on if you have short or tall. And then that rear angle isn't really changing. And I bet if we got super nerdy and I started doing a bunch of measurements, I bet we would find that that discrepancy is pretty big across bikes. I mean, I know how to do it. I just don't know that I care enough to do it yet.
Well, one thing that I think is a little over the heads of, I mean, a lot of people, just something they don't think about. I mean, something that a lot of people don't think about and that would be way over the heads of some people is center of gravity. So where your center of gravity is when you sit on your bike or stand, you know, on your pedals is vastly different than where mine is. I mean, I'm shorter for one, so that automatically makes it, you know, lower. But also the fact that, like, if you have, the stereotypical female build where you have wider hips and narrower shoulders, like, your center of gravity is slightly lower than someone like you who's tall and lanky with narrower hips and wider shoulders. So
not that lanky anymore.
That's a...
Your boy getting thick.
But that has a big impact on how you negotiate technical stuff on a bicycle. Maybe that has something that might be what Matt is in a roundabout way getting to without knowing that that's what he's getting to. But
he's just saying as bikes get bigger, chain stays should get longer. Like that's what he's saying.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, it sounds like our listeners got his ducks in a row with ordering a custom bike.
Yeah. And I mean, that 30 millimeter bottom bracket drop is kind of what I've seen. Or 30 millimeters additional bottom bracket drop is kind of what I've seen.
Maybe he should order two of these and you could get one.
What do you say his reach is going to be? He doesn't say, but with the stack in the neighborhood of 630, like, yeah, just go on and get two. Just send one out to Howard. I'll try it. I don't know where I'll get wheels, but I'll try it. Yeah, I mean, that 1230 wheelbase is still shorter than my stump jumper. So the bike's still going to feel really nimble. Let's see if I can find chainstay length on here. Let's see.
Yeah, he only has a stack on here, 640-ish.
Yeah, I mean, chainstay... Oh, so the chainstay does grow on the stump jumper in the 2022 stump jumper Evo. My chainstay is 448, and I've never been in a situation where I'm like... Like, when I rode the Esker Rowell, that bike had a really short chainstay. Like, I rode a demo bike a handful of times, at least twice. Anyways, that bike felt playful. But it didn't feel stable at, like, mock chicken on, let's call it buff chunder, you know, where you're kind of hauling ass on a gradual downhill and it's not rock garden, but it's not paved. You know, it's in that, like, there's some bump. Like, the stump jumper just feels planted and dialed. And I think that the chainstay length has a lot to do with it because there's, like, when we talk about being in the bike, that's one way of center of gravity. But also think about when I drop my seat and move my hips back, I have more legs to move my ass back further than Andrea can. So I can get to back too easily. I don't know.
Well, yeah, like that makes sense that when you lower your center of gravity, it goes further towards the back of the bike than when I lower my center of gravity.
Yeah, because I got them femurs. They're long and they put all this power booty back over there.
What do you think the wheelbase is on my S3 Kinevo SL?
I bet it is 1300.
That's a little aggressive. It's 1260.
Oh, so you're only an inch, 25 millimeters, an inch shorter than my stump jumper.
Sounds like it, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, are we... I mean, we have more content, but I think we should spread it out since we've been recording for a while. And
that's totally fine because I want
some of the leftovers from lunch and then, you know.
Couch.
Yeah, just lay on the couch for a while and keep rotting.
All right, let's do it. Let's shut it down and we'll do it again next week.
Kenny, you cool with that? Yep. Oh, I need to read patrons, but.
Fuck.
Yep.
Ah, Jesus. Oh, did you tell people you actually had a skunk in your trap yet?
Yeah, so we have a patron skunk in your trap. And one morning I have like just a really cheap Amazon trap that was the first one that I bought. And I don't even take it out with me anymore because it kind of sucks. Like the latch on it is really bogus. But anyway, I had thrown some beaver parts in there and went out in the morning and there's a fucking skunk in the trap. And I'm like, God damn it. And I got a tarp. I was going to like try to get it out of the trap by like putting the tarp over it and then reaching over the top and like trying to unlatch it, and I just couldn't do it. And the skunk is just fucking pissed, and it's spraying, like, actively. And it smells terrible, and I ended up just having to shoot it.
Well, the best part is, now, that was probably 10 days ago.
At least. It was, I think, more than that, wasn't it? I don't know.
No, it was roughly, I was doing the math while you were talking. It was roughly 10 days ago, and I walk outside in the morning when, like, the humidity is a little higher and stuff. There's, like, the other day when it rained, it was like, yeah, there's a fucking skunk sprayed in our yard. And, like, 10 days later, there's still, like, it's skunky.
It's real skunky. So, yeah, it was bad. I haven't even set the trap back because I don't like that situation. Like, I don't like it where it's like, I've got this pissed off fucking fart weasel in here, and I just have to kill it to get it out. Now, I don't like that, and I know we have more skunks around here, so I don't even know if I'm going to set that trap back up because I don't want to be that person that just is killing a skunk to kill a skunk. I mean, yeah, no one really likes them, but they're, I don't know.
They ain't hurt nobody.
Yeah, they're not. As long as you're not trying to fuck with them in an animal trap, they're really not going to hurt you. They're going to, you know, make your dog smell terrible for a while, but yeah. So, sorry, little fart weasel.
All right, start with them patrons.
Okay. So at $10 a month, we've got Kurt, Timothy, Taylor Zwift, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Samuel, Burt Reynolds' Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds' Mustache, Taperbore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gay Porn, Cam Irish One, Zach, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Phil McCrevis, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Just Another Asshole on a Bike, Raccoon and I, Getting High, _, Noah, Cool Beans. Hold on, I've got to scroll over here. It's going to take a second.
Okay.
Someone's got a long name. It's making the list screw up. Cool Beans, Matt's Church Bell, Oliver, Close Off, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Tom P, Bad Touch, Tyler Durden, Epstein Island, Bike Trails, and Pizza Buffet.
At 11.11.
At 11.11 per month. Patamillion Disco Ball at 14. Matt, that might be a nod to you.
Oh, Jesus.
Dean at 16.50 Australian. At $20 a month, we've got Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, at $26.06 per month.
Let me read this one. Hong Dong Industries. It's not on fire. It's experiencing uncontrollable thermal runaway.
Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors. We're touched by the TISM, powered by Tylenol, at 50. I like our patrons really got into some good names this time. Like, that's, they're mixing it up a little bit. I like it.
Pretty topical, yeah. Even like a Rad Power one in there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, well.
Shut her down.
Yeah, I think that's good for this week. Let me get to the shutdown button.
God, I just want a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I just want some apple pie. Kenny, are you going to have any leftover Thanksgiving snacks before bed?
Maybe. I think I've got a cheesecake.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.